Examine the latest news from the presidential campaign trail, including the GOP candidates debating in Milwaukee. Plus, some of the candidates are weighing in on the racial tensions at the University of Missouri that led to the resignation of two top university officials. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will discuss these issues and many more in this edition of The Week in Review. Our two guests will also debate the latest in state politics, including the legislation that will overhaul campaign finance law in Wisconsin and dismantling of the Government Accountability Board. Plus, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation under fire. Does it need a total makeover following the news of the Oscar Mayer plant closure in Madison? Are there issues that you want to discuss? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Louis Fortas is with us, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Jason Cry is with us, an attorney in Milwaukee and the executive director of Hispanics for School Choice. He writes the Rattlebag blog as a part of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Purple Wisconsin Project. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Lewis. It's good to be with you this morning.
Nice to have you both with us. The Republican presidential candidates took center stage in Milwaukee this week for their fourth debate, so let's begin there. They mostly discussed the economy, but they also got into immigration and national security. Jason Cry, what did you think of what the Republicans had to say?
Well, overall, I thought it was a very interesting debate. I also had the pleasure of being there in person, which was a first for me. I have a hard time staying engaged with these things generally. I can't stay through a whole debate when it's on television, but to be there for the spectacle in person was interesting. Russell Kirk long ago wrote a book called The Conservative Mind, where in the beginning he lays out six canons of conservative thoughts, and I think the second one is that conservatism embraces proliferation of ideas and variety, and I thought that was on the stage this week. There you have Rand Paul and Marco Rubio talking about foreign affairs. You have differences in immigration, and so I think that whether or not you support any of the candidates, what was interesting is that within the party, you have a lot of different approaches to issues that the president's going to have to deal with.
What stood out to you, Lewis?
Well, first of all, I thought it was good for Milwaukee and Wisconsin to be on the national stage. I thought the Wisconsin theater looked very good. I thought that it made Milwaukee look good, which is always a good thing. I find them very, very entertaining, the debates. And I think Jason's right. There is beginning to show a differing of opinion among the candidates. Initially, it seemed like they were all pretty much on the same page, but now we're beginning to show some differences. And these are people, except for a couple of them, that have spent their whole lives looking at, maybe I can become president. And now they're at that point where they're on the stage. And these folks aren't going to give up easily. I mean, if it comes down to, taking off the gloves and really punching it out, I think you're going to see a long, drawn-out primary election here that's going to get a little nastier and a lot more interesting.
Yeah. In the debate, Jeb Bush said that the Hillary Clinton campaign was probably giving each other high fives over the talk of deporting 11 million undocumented immigrants, which is something that Donald Trump, among others, wants to do. Jason Cry, do you think Hillary Clinton's campaign was doing high fives?
Well, probably. I mean, I think if I were in Hillary Clinton's position, I'd be high-fiving too, because from her perspective, the GOP candidates are spending all this time ruining their party's goodwill in this Manic community, and all she has to do is sit back and watch without expending any resources or really saying anything. However, I mean, I think that sooner or later we'll have to see what she really thinks. I mean, we all know that under the Obama administration, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has removed over 300,000 undocumented immigrants. And about 50,000 of those were deported after traffic offenses. This is one of those unfulfilled campaign promises of the Obama administration, immigration reform. So Democrats lately don't have a great track record on immigration, and so the narrative that Hillary or any other Democrat's going to be better than the Republicans isn't necessarily true. As we move forward with all this campaigning, I look forward to real ideas and real solutions from both sides.
Mm-hmm. What about, Lewis, your thoughts on the immigration debate?
Yeah, I agree with Jason on the deportations. I mean, that's been a disappointment. There have been a lot of deportations under the Obama administration. I do think Hillary, I think it was pretty clear, Hillary has come out and said that she would not be as aggressive as the Obama administration was. But I don't think it is at all fair to say Obama hasn't tried to do some kind of immigration reform. You had Mitch McConnell, who was able to block anything in the Senate with the filibuster, to basically say nothing's going to happen. And that being the case, you know, what can you do? And so he tried a little, could get nowhere. And so after after the last election, he's taken some executive actions. The Republicans have been going crazy over that, and they're all upset and angry that he's going around Congress. And he probably, you know, he shouldn't be going around Congress. At the same time, what do you do when Congress is saying, we will not, under any circumstances, you know, give the Democrats a victory on this, and it's something that needs to be done? You begin to chip away at it. So we'll see what happens. I think Hillary, if she is our candidate and if she is elected, I think she will try to move it forward more aggressively than Obama has.
So, Jason, who impressed you the most at the debate?
Well, that's a great question. I think that Marco Rubio did very well. I think that Rand Paul had his moments. I mean, I really don't know that there were any losers. I think that Ben Carson had great closing remarks. Even John Kasich, I mean, he kind of ended up getting some boos at different points because he kept butting in just to make his points. But initially, he was breaking in and making some interesting points. You kind of expect Marco Rubio to do well just because he's so gifted as an orator. I also think that, the other two that we've been talking a lot about, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, I don't know that either one really did much to hurt their positions. I think that, you know, they could have done something to really hurt their campaigns, but both kind of are hanging tough. So I think that what this has done is really set the stage for more interesting discussions and a flushing out of the differences of opinion that everyone was expressing on stage.
Yeah, did you hear of any race changers in that debate, Lewis?
Okay, because I was going to ask you how to clarify your question about it being impressed with. If you're saying who I thought did well in the debate and didn't do well in the debate, the one candidate who I think is, if he does get the nomination, would be the most substantive, would be Kasich. I think Kasich has an interesting resume, and I think he can argue a pretty strong case. Rubio is interesting because here's a guy who, unlike most of them on the stage, he actually came up through the political ranks. He was in the state assembly in Florida. And, you know, to win those races, you have to go door to door, and you have to talk to a lot of people. When you do that, you learn a lot. Number one, about how people think and how people, you know, what's going on in their lives. But more importantly, you learn how to answer questions so you get their head shaking in the right direction when you're standing at their front door. And he has shown that he knows how to answer the questions politically in such a way that he can get a good applause from a Republican audience. So I think he's very good on the stage. Cruz is a smart guy. He's a clever guy. And very, very far right wing. Carly seems, she shows up as much too angry on the stage, and she doesn't answer questions. She comes in with her pat answer, and she tries to fit it into a question. And then finally, Carson is going to crash and burn because he may have been a brilliant neurosurgeon. He is not a policy guy. He has no idea how to do this or how to apparently how to run something. So anyway, it's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes out.
All right, let's take a call on the debate. Let's bring in Boyd from Wautoma, and then Jason, you can follow up. Boyd, go ahead.
Good morning, Joy, and hello to Lewis and to Jason. I did not see the debate, but do you think that more focus is going to be given to Rubio? He seems to be stepping up his game, and as Lewis had just said before, I think you're going to see Ben Carson's star fade. I think he's his own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. Jason?
Well, he's getting quite a bit of attention right now, so I think that... And we don't see, or at least I don't see how he always seems on. I mean, I think that what's impressive in being there in person as well is just that the stature and the energy that one has to have to hang in there and do this for the amount of time that those guys are standing on the stage is just incredible. And you know, he's always on point. He's always very clear. Yeah, as he continues to do that, I think that he's going to continue to get more attention.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, you were going to say something after Lewis said that he thought Ben Carson was going to fade, or you know that he was. Do you disagree with that?
Oh, I don't disagree with that. What I was going to add was that one thing I forgot to say was that in the initial lower card, if you will, or the JV debate, I thought that Chris Christie did an excellent job, and I think he really just handled himself well, and I hope that he can join the A team, I guess, or the larger group as we move forward, because he also has a great ability to get his points through and help clarify the issues on the stage.
We have to take a short break, and then we'll continue talking about some presidential campaign issues, including some pretty ugly jabs between the two frontrunners, Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Is this the beginning of the end for the frontrunners? We'll ask our guests that, and we'll welcome any other issues you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with our two guests about the top state and national political news stories of the week. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Lewis Fortas, who is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly, and Jason Cry, an attorney in Milwaukee and the executive director of Hispanics for School Choice. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in with a comment, or if you'd like to bring up a topic. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, the candidates also made some news after the debate. Just yesterday, Donald Trump took a shot at Ben Carson, saying that his self-described pathological temper is incurable, adding that it is the sickness of a child molester. Carson's campaign called Trump bitter and rambling. Carly Fiorina chimed in to say that Trump would know something about being pathological, referencing Trump's meeting with Putin that Trump cited during Tuesday's debate. That didn't happen, apparently. Jason, what do you make of this this flare-up? Are they going to take each other down with this kind of personal attacks?
Well, I'm not sure, but I guess it's unfortunate when you have this kind of thing going on. So I think that, you know, our country has a lot of important issues that, that they should be talking about and this sort of thing. And, you know, Trump has always been kind of riding that line of being overly bombastic and boorish. And I think here he once again takes it too far. But as we've seen in recent months, I doubt that it's going to hurt him because those who are behind him seem just to ignore this sort of thing.
Louis Fortas?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, these folks look at the situation saying, they look at it, look to the left and look to the right and say, these are the people in my way to perhaps becoming, you know, getting the position that's the most powerful position in the world. So they are going to take the gloves off. The problem is with Trump is he takes the gloves off like a junior high school kid. I mean, where he starts, you know, name-calling and whatever. I think there are ways that if you're going to get nasty, you can get nasty in a little more intelligent way. So, and then Carly is out to get him after he's been slapping her down. And so it's going to get interesting. It's going to become, it's, I just feel sorry for the old-style, you know, kind of the more moderate Republicans as they're watching their party self-destruct.
Let's go to Chris in Madison. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Hey, I would just like to say I've heard a lot of people say that Ben Carson isn't really qualified to do his job as presidency because he doesn't have the experience. To me personally, I feel that's his greatest qualification is that he hasn't held an office.
Yeah, and you're not, Chris, troubled by whatever inconsistencies that are coming up this past week over what he wrote in his book, his biography?
You know, the media is out to kill this guy. So, absolutely not.
All right, so he is qualified because he's not a politician. Louis Fortas, what do you think?
First of all, I get a kick out of the fact that the candidates up there, if they don't like a question, they attack the questioner. If they get a little criticism, they say, you know, the media is out to get me. I mean, you know, this is what politics is all about. If you're going to fly a little higher, they're going to start shooting at you. I mean, that's the way things work in the world. I think that Carson is this idea that he's a non-politician, so therefore he can do a better job. Like any kind of you know, institution or whatever, Congress is very, very complicated, and you need to have some understanding of how politics works if you want to be effective. You just can't come in there like a thug and just say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And they're just going to, I mean, these folks, a lot of them have been up there 20, 30 years. They know how to dig their heels in. They know how to stop. It's very easy to stop something in the legislature. It's very hard to move something forward. And these non-politicians that think they can stroll in and do their job are going to have a very rude awakening if they ever did get elected. So it'll be interesting. He will crash and burn, I guarantee you.
Before the debate, Governor Walker and Jeb Bush touted school choice in Waukesha. It was an event that was hosted by Hispanics for School Choice, which is the organization that you, Jason, head up. What is your hope for voucher schools in the context of the presidential race?
Well, so we hosted the event at a charter school in Waukesha called La Casa de Esperanza, which is really a hub for the county there, and they do all kinds of things from financial stability initiatives to job training and so on. So they're a full-service social service organization. We really wanted to highlight two men who've done, you know, as much or more than really anyone for education reform. It was a great conversation. We had students and parents there, and I think that so it was especially interesting because here we're celebrating 25 years of school choice in Wisconsin this year. We're at one of the newer, if not the newest, charter school in the state, and we really wanted to raise awareness of the issue and the good that these programs do for families who wouldn't be able to choose a school under other circumstances. I know I'm probably not going to make the front page of the Shepherd Express anytime soon with this, but we support it and we were happy to highlight what these guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. Louis?
I think that some, you know, the idea of some competition in the school systems is not a bad idea. I think that if this whole school choice program 25 years ago would have been started and structured in a way that was honestly trying to do that, and had these charter schools within the public schools and had competition within the public school systems and all, I think this could have been, you know, very interesting, and I think we could have seen perhaps some interesting results. The past 25 years in the school choice, you see, when you have honest testing, there is no difference between the school, the children, the test scores of the children in the school choice schools versus the public schools. And when you think about the fact that there's a self-selection process, that the parents actually have to intervene, so you have parents that are more engaged in a kid's life, that in itself should show a significant increase in their test scores versus the other kids that remained in MPS. That hasn't happened. These have not been successful, but I think the idea of a little bit of competition within the public school systems could be helpful.
Yeah. Jeb Bush said at that event, "I am honored to be here with Scott Walker, who has fought for school choice and school reform." And more. But then Walker told reporters not to read too much into the joint appearance, saying he and Bush were both longtime advocates for school choice programs and that he's not endorsing any of the Republican candidates yet. He was also asked if he was interested in being vice president, and Walker replied that such considerations were premature, but that the future remains to be seen. So what do you make of that, Lewis, first?
I think that Scott Walker is smart enough to realize that this presidential primary in the Republican side is very, very fluid, and he does not want to lay down his bet at this point because it's very difficult to predict who is going to end up winning. At the same time, the longer you wait to place your bet, the less valuable your bet is. But, I mean, if he came out strongly behind Bush today and if Bush ultimately won, Bush would owe him. If he waits too long and he waits till it's becoming a pretty safe bet that Bush or whoever he's thinking about is going to win, you know, it doesn't, he doesn't register. So I think he's being very calculating at this point, and I think it's pretty early to be, you know, and there's some such fluidity that he's just waiting to lay down his bet. That's what I think is going on, because he would like probably to get something going forward.
So, Jason, do you think Governor Walker is VP material?
Well, he didn't give me any inside information at our event this week. So, but I think that you know, if you support Governor Walker's reforms here in the state, you see somebody who may very well be a good VP material. I think also, just because of Wisconsin's stature in presidential elections, that he would be in play even if he was less accomplished or infamous, I guess, depending on the way you see him.
Another development on the campaign trail. Conservatives are criticizing Hillary Clinton for laughing at a comment that a veteran made at an event in New Hampshire. The vet said that he used to work at Hewlett-Packard when Carly Fiorina was in charge before being laid off, and he said that every time he saw her on TV, he wanted to reach through the screen and strangle Fiorina. Clinton, along with the crowd, laughed and said she would not mess with this vet. Republicans then said Clinton and Democrats had lost all credibility, claiming to be a party that stands up for women. The Clinton camp responded by saying the man was just using a figure of speech that should not be taken literally, and that Republicans shouldn't pretend that this is a bigger deal than it is. Lewis, how big a deal is this?
Not a big deal at all. First of all, you know, I don't know. I've only, you know, read certain things. It seemed to me that he made no reference, this vet had made no reference to her gender, that he basically was referring to her as a CEO, and he wanted to strangle the CEO that was responsible for him getting fired. I don't know. I mean, to say that that was sexist, as the Republicans are saying. What does that mean? Anytime you criticize a woman in any way, shape, or form, that's going to be sexist? I mean, if you're talking about, you know, kind of carrying things to an extreme, I think that this is carrying it to an extreme. He was critical of losing, you know, his job because she, in his eyes, was doing a poor job as a CEO, and it caused him to be laid off.
Jason?
Right. I mean, I think in our polarized political world, you know, one man's imminent threat is another's figure of speech, which is what I think the Clinton aide called these comments. And to me, I mean, I agree. It's a non-story. It's a foolish comment. But I think that one's gut reaction to this incident kind of reveal where you're at in the political spectrum. Because I think that many believe, and not unjustifiably, that if the shoe was on the other foot, if Fiorina laughed at the idea of someone choking Hillary Clinton, there'd be a different camp trying to make this into a story. So this is just part of kind of the wrangling that goes on in these campaigns.
Some of the Republican candidates running for president this week blasted University of Missouri administrators for resigning in the wake of continued protests, while the Democrats running said that they were standing with the students and others looking to address what they say is structural racism. Donald Trump said on Fox News, "I think it's just disgusting. I think the two people who resigned at the University of Missouri are weak, ineffective people. When they resigned, they set something in motion that's going to be a disaster for the next long period of time." Jason Cry, what do you make of how the Republicans are and Trump specifically are reacting to this University of Missouri situation?
Well, I think there may be something to what he's saying, but overall, I mean, as Trump does, he's coming on much too strongly. I think that Missouri, like a lot of other incidents involving race in this country in recent years, it's a very complicated situation, and what we need from both parties are people who are willing to look at this issue with compassion, a sincere interest in understanding why the race issue has become what it has in this country, and try to mend things. So I don't think that calling names and criticizing in a harsh way is really accomplishing much, because you have one side that thinks that they're justified, the students, and they feel strongly about what they're doing. And just calling names and criticizing them and those who are resigning doesn't really accomplish much. So I'd like to see more sincere efforts from both sides to find some sort of consensus to fix this, which, you know, it's one of the major major issues, social and cultural issues that this country is wrangling with.
Yeah, Republican Ben Carson said the resignations are a sign of the politically correct police going too far. The students were saying that these administrators were not doing enough to address things like African Americans being called the N-word, a swastika apparently drawn with feces on a wall. I mean, is that just being politically correct to object to that, Jason?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And so again, I think that what we need to do is try to find ways to have a conversation about this. And you know, I don't fully understand this story and all the sources of how all this came to be, but I think that both sides need to have a sincere, be sincere about trying to come to an agreement or an understanding. And there are real wounds that exist. So rather than, you know, say it's someone being overly politically correct or something like that, I mean, that just doesn't seem to me like a solution. It seems like it's kind of a, you know, political name calling.
Yeah, and the Democrats, including Bernie Sanders, tweeted, "It's time to address structural racism on college campuses." Lewis, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, apparently there's some real serious problems on that Missouri campus, and regarding race. And, I mean, recently there have been death threats, and, it sounds fairly serious, like real serious. But I think the biggest problem was the approach of the university, and this is, the Donald Trump approach where, I'm not going to negotiate with him or whatever. I think that insensitivity was what caused the big problem. I think if the chancellor or the president of the university would have, brought a delegation of the students in and listened to them and tried to, work with them, as Jason was correctly pointing out, this is a problem. It needs to be dealt with. It's a problem that has plagued this country since its inception, this whole racism. And it needs to be, we need to continue to work on it. We have a long way to go. But I thought the part that was probably most interesting in all of this is it took the football players going on strike, which affects a stream of income, and also there would be a penalty, I think, of $1 million if they didn't show up to play, is what brought the their equivalent of the Board of Regents into the game, and that's when the administrator started to resign. So it's interesting and sad commentary about the university is, well, all you have to do is get to their sources of money, and everybody perks up and starts listening.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some state political issues, lots to talk about, including the state Senate last Friday and early Saturday morning passing legislation that would overhaul the Government Accountability Board and campaign finance law in Wisconsin. We'll talk about that and more, and welcome any more of your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly, and Jason Cry, attorney in Milwaukee, the executive director of Hispanics for School Choice. He writes the Rattlebag blog as part of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Purple Wisconsin Project. Let's shift gears now to state politics. Early on Saturday morning, the state Senate passed a bill that would dissolve the Government Accountability Board. It would create two boards, one that oversees elections, the other would handle ethics. The Senate also approved a campaign finance bill that retained a Republican provision allowing people to not list their employer when making political donations. Both of these bills will be taken up by the Assembly on Monday. Jason, should the Assembly pass these bills the way they are, or should they make changes?
Well, I think that they'll likely make some changes, and at the crux of these measures, as you mentioned, the two things. I mean, one, I think that there's a lot of people have lost confidence in the GAB for various reasons, and so I'll be interested in how the Assembly hashes out what has been suggested, and regarding the listing of someone's employer, I think that again there are many who feel that donors were unfairly targeted for supporting one candidate or another, and so this is still something that's lingering out of the intensity and the toxic environment that surrounded Governor Walker's recall election. So is it needed? I think probably so, and I hope that what's eventually passed into law makes everyone comfortable again so we can move on to doing what's good for the state.
Louis Fortas, do you think this legislation is good for Wisconsin or not?
Of course not. It is absolutely moving in the wrong direction. The GAB, Government Accountability Board, that legislation is viewed as a national model. Legislators from other states are coming to Wisconsin to study how it's working, what's going on. The national state legislative conference, they are viewing this as a national model. The problem is, for the Republicans, is it's doing a good job. It's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And they don't want it doing that because they are the ones who are trying to be fast and loose with the ethics in Wisconsin. And they're the ones that, you know, when they get accused of something where they are legitimately breaking the law, their response is, let's just change the law so we're not breaking the law. And that's what they've been doing, and the GAB has been trying to fight back a little, so it's time to smack them down, and that's what's going on. We did a cover in the newspaper. It's in the question. It was just a black and white, very stark cover that said, has Wisconsin become a corrupt state? And I got more calls from Republicans saying, great job, great job. You know, they're the ones who are equally, Democrats and Republicans are both equally concerned that Wisconsin is becoming a corrupt state. And we were very clear. It has nothing to do with policy. If you don't like a particular policy, policy is policy. Those in power, you know, they have the votes, they change the laws. But it's the procedural things, the way things are being done in this state, where a Supreme Court justice decides whether he or she wants to recuse himself, not the fact that they have all kind of conflicts of interest, and anybody looking at the situation would say, of course they're going to recuse themselves, and they choose not to. Things like that that are going on in this state that is making once Wisconsin, which was once viewed as this shining state that was, you know, pure as can be, has become perhaps one of the most corrupt states. We're becoming like Louisiana.
Jason?
Well, I think that there are legitimate criticisms that the Republicans have had about the GAB. And I'd say also that whether or not the initial model was, or the initial organization was a model nationally, I mean, even good models can be misused. And so I've heard things which I think are true. For example, the petition signatures for the recall election, you know, people signing as Mickey Mouse or Ronald McDonald or so on. And there's also been a lot of partisanship within the organization. And so I think that that's what's driven a lot of this. And this needs to be an even-keeled organization. And so that's what I think is driving it. Now, and it needs to be explained. It needs to be worked out. And then that's what the process is for. But I look forward to that being done.
Yeah, the state Senate made a change to the Assembly's bill that it passed with the GAB overhaul. It wouldn't be all an even number of partisan appointments on the board, but there would be two judges. Lewis, does that ease your mind at all?
A slight amount, yes. Because I think otherwise what they wanted to do is make it partisan again, which is one of the things that they, a few years ago, I think it was in 07, when they changed this to the GAB. And I think this went through one house unanimously, and I think through the Assembly with just two people voting against it. This was viewed as a consensus bill, a popular bill, creating the GAB. And so so the idea, what they're trying to do now is set it up for what they was to make it partisan again, and so it would become a 3-3 or a 4-4 vote, and nothing would be done because it would be an even vote. And so the idea of putting the couple of retired judges on gives a little bit of hope that there may be some fairness going on, and it would transcend some of the partisan issues that both sides are going to stick with their party.
Yeah, so the new campaign finance law or bill would open the door to unlimited spending on state political campaigns. It would allow candidate campaigns to coordinate with the issue ad groups. The Republicans, Lewis, are saying they're just codifying what court rulings have already said about campaign finance law, that's all this is.
Well, unfortunately, some of that is true. The problem that you have is you have the Supreme Court has become a lot more corrupt, for lack of a better way of saying it. The last three conservative justices that were elected all came in under a cloud of ethical problems. One of them was a judge who was ruling in favor of her husband's company and basically feathering her own nest. Another one came in with having made, you know, kind of a racist, deceptive claims in his advertising that, again, brought him under an ethical cloud. So you have, and the biggest thing is there was about $10 million by special interest spent on the races of these three, these last three conservative justices in their races. So, yeah, it goes up to the court, and the court rules with the conservatives, and then they're saying, oh, so we're just codifying what our justices who have been bought by the special interests have ruled. This is not the Wisconsin that we grew up in. This is a very different Wisconsin, and that's the sad thing. And I'm saying both Democrats and Republicans, if you get them one-on-one and you're talking to them, they're very concerned. This is very unethical stuff going on in the state, and we're going to pay for it because the special interests are going to just have a field day.
Yeah, what do you say to those who are concerned, Jason, that this is the end of clean, good, transparent government, and government is for sale in Wisconsin now?
Well, I guess I don't totally see it. I mean, I maybe see some concern, but as you just said, I mean, the case law exists. This is a codification of the case law, and I don't think that something like removing where someone is employed from political donations is really doing that. I think that it just depends on where you sit on the spectrum, and so if you're more on the left, you're saying that things are becoming more seedy and unclear. If you're from the right, you're saying, look, we need to do this stuff because all these other bad things have happened and it has to be fixed. Look at the recalls, look at all these other things. And so it's how the system works. I don't think anyone's doing anything out of bounds. They're working within the playing field. And both sides do it with different things all the time.
Yeah. We'll have more on this issue on our state capitol report on Monday. Well, that is when the assembly is expected to pass this legislation on Monday. Let's move on to another issue. Republican lawmakers say they are looking to rebrand the state's job creation agency, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and may sink more money into it as well. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he wants to collaborate on ideas with Democrats. He floated the idea of having private banks making loans that the state guarantees rather than having the state directly give loans to companies. Louis, so what would you like to see done with WEDIC?
First of all, let's go back to how it was created and why it was created. Walker got elected. There was a Department of Commerce, which most of the people in the business community that I have spoken to thought it was doing as well as any other Department of Commerce can do. And the idea is to cheerlead for Wisconsin a little bit, try to, sell the good parts of Wisconsin to businesses and to try to encourage them to expand in Wisconsin, come to Wisconsin, set up their branch plant in Wisconsin, whatever the case may be. Walker came in and there was the idea that the private sector can do it better. They're going to be more nimble and they'll be able to be more effective. And it has failed miserably. And I think you're finally getting, Walker and Voss and everybody on the Republican side finally admitting that it's been a colossal failure. They couldn't even track loan repayments. So we lost a lot of money just because they were unable to track the, this is what, a loan officer does in a bank. I mean, a pretty basic thing. And they were failing at that. So, I think what needs to be done is I would set up a special committee, bipartisan, bring in, outside business people also who are not in the legislature and spend, a few months meeting and trying to figure out, number one, what do we want this agency to do? And number two, how do we create an agency that effectively reaches those goals? I mean, this is basic management, which, again, this agency has failed miserably. And it's sad because we're losing money. If they would have been doing their job and talking to the Oscar Mayer people, perhaps Oscar Mayer would have been convinced to stay and keep that plant there. A lot of, you know, working people are going to lose their jobs, and it's going to destroy their lives. So it's sad. It's just sad, and it was done on an ideologically driven. That's the thing that makes it even sadder.
Yeah. Well, Jason, what do you think should be done about Weedick?
Well, I saw a quote by Robin Voss saying something, you know, if you type Weedick into Google, you don't get a warm, fuzzy feeling about the agency being your gateway into coming into Wisconsin or something like that. And so whenever politicians start talking about warm, fuzzy feelings, I get really interested because I can't wait to see what they are going to come up with. And Weedick, I agree, it's riddled with all these problems. And I think that it needs to be more than a rebranding. I think that, as Lewis says, maybe it's a committee. It's something. I know that Robin Voss was saying that, you know, Peter Bark is going to be involved, and it'll be a bipartisan effort to fix things. You need that because the goodwill and the trust that's been lost in the community, I think, is serious. So We'll see, you know, and I don't know that with Oscar Mayer, I've read that they were planning on leaving no matter what. It's hard to Monday morning quarterback these type of things, but perhaps if it was an agency that was actually functioning and fulfilling the mission it was supposed to do, it could have done something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but either way, it needs to be more than a rebranding. It needs to be a serious reevaluation of how they go about their business.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Weedick as well on our state capitol report on Monday from 7 until 8. Let's end with Starbucks pushing back against accusations from Donald Trump and some others that its plain red holiday cup design is somehow a poke at Christmas. Jason, do you think Starbucks is promoting some sort of anti-Christian message here with a plain cup?
Well, I don't. Someone sent me an article that showed the gradual simplification of Starbucks' Christmas cup designs from 2009 to the present. And so it has been overly simplified, and they slowly removed Christmas trees and ornaments, and I think they moved to sleds and snow scenes to this current cup, which is just red. I think that my wife is an interior decorator, and I know that kind of that minimalistic approach to design is very popular right now. Starbucks exists to sell coffee to as many people as possible. I'm a practicing Catholic. I don't expect huge corporations to endorse my worldview because they exist to make money. I don't think this is a big deal. Frankly, what's more offensive to me is the abuse of Christian symbols and iconography, which is more readily available to see. And
yeah, we have less than 30 seconds, Lewis. The Starbucks cup, are you going to go to a local coffee shop?
I think the biggest issue is Trump is trying to pander to Ben Carson's evangelical base. Carson is supported by the evangelical Christian base, has a very strong support there, and I think Trump is just trying to cut into that.
Thank you both very much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network.